Welcome to CII Podcasts.
Hello everyone and welcome to another interesting episode of the CII Podcasts. My name is Jayant Sriram and I'll be hosting this episode for you. As World Health Day is just around the corner, we're here to discuss a very interesting topic: the role of health in national development and global progress. Health stands as the cornerstone of national development and global advancement, with its significance extending far beyond medical interventions to encompass economic prosperity, social stability, and human potential. In this interconnected world, the state of health within a nation not only affects its own citizens, but reverberates across borders, influencing global progress. So how can we unlock the full potential of health as the driver of sustainable development and a catalyst for a better world for all? To discuss this today, we have a very special guest, Mr. Dilip Jose, MD and CEO, Manipal Health Enterprises Private Limited, an integrated health services system and the second largest hospital network in India. He has over 32 years of experience across various sectors and functional areas, including 18 years in healthcare and 14 years in corporate finance and strategy. Thank you so much, Dilip, for being here with us today and making time for us on the CII podcast.
Thank you, Jayant. It's a pleasure to be here.
So if I can start with a slightly overall question that's a little broad, how does the health of a nation's population impact its overall progress and development?
See, Jayant, the well-being of all citizens, you know, who contribute to economic growth and economic prosperity of the country is fundamental. I think only healthy individuals, I'm not only talking about physical health, I would also want to allude to mental health in this context. I think healthy individuals, at whatever age they are, where they are in service, they are currently working, retired, students, whatever segment that you belong to, I think healthy individuals contribute to well-being and growth of the society, growth of the country. And also as a minor point, that wellness also ensures that as a nation we spend less on healthcare delivery, less on curative aspects of healthcare delivery. I think these things put together, that I think a healthy nation would be composed from a healthy population, healthy individuals, and it is fundamental. I think it's very, very basic that the health of the citizens is key to prosperity of the country.
Okay, thank you. I think that was very well articulated. Thank you for that answer. What are some of the key areas where improvements in healthcare can lead to significant advancement in societal well-being and economic growth?
Yeah, I think the first and foremost is the need for the country to really orient itself to wellness or a preventatively oriented healthcare system. That, you know, India's current system is curatively oriented, as indeed it is in the case of most countries of the world. What it means is when we fall sick, we go to a doctor or approach a hospital and then, you know, take treatment for whatever symptoms that we have or conditions that we have. And a curatively oriented system like this tends to be expensive, because a lot of the time the early diagnosis, particularly if you have something severe or serious, early diagnosis does not happen soon enough, so leading to avoidable morbidities and avoidable cost of treatment. And as a nation, we really can't afford expensive tertiary care treatment, you know, irrespective of who pays for it, you know, whether an individual pays for it or an insurance company pays for it or the government pays for it. I think at a macro level, it is a matter of just accounting that, you know, who pays for it. The fact is, the country can't really afford tertiary healthcare that is expensive. Therefore, the mindset change that is required is to be a preventatively oriented society. I think that in itself would significantly change the economic contours, economic benefits for the society, because people take accountability for their own wellness and in turn, you know, improve their own productivity, reduces cost of cost of, say, tertiary care or costly treatment, And what we must keep in mind is when somebody in the family falls sick severely, that, you know, requires hospitalization, requires a surgery, requires prolonged treatment, the whole family comes under pressure, that, you know, both economic pressure and mental pressure. I think, therefore, preventing actually more and more people from requiring hospitalization is key to, you know, we moving as a society to a wellness-oriented regime. And it is not only about saving money, it is also, therefore, about improving the mental peace and also the mental wellness of all of us, the whole society.
Okay, thank you. I really like the point about, you know, moving to preventative healthcare rather than, you know, curative. I think that's really important. And I'm glad you also allied that answer to a question of cost and the fact that, you know, tertiary healthcare is very expensive. We have a large population in India. It's not always possible to, you know, the costs involved are huge. Which kind of brings me to the next question, because the theme for World Health Day 2024 this year, which is on the 7th of April, is My Health, My Right, which seems to emphasize health as a fundamental human right and presses upon the need for easy access to quality healthcare. So in line with this, you know, how can government policies incentivize and better prioritize access to public health? Because, you know, of course, as you mentioned, cost is a huge question.
Yeah, I think it is certainly a fundamental right. You know, my health, my right is a good way of putting it. But we should not forget, along with that right, there is also an obligation for all of us to ensure that we take good care of our own health. That, you know, it will be a dichotomy if we believe the health is our right and access to care or free care is our right. But at the same time, if that access and that right comes along with simultaneously with the accountability for us to lead our lives in a manner which is supporting good health, that therefore eating the right things, you know, exercising, you know, that wellness oriented regime that we talked about, I think you know, all that is important. I think these two things go hand in hand. So we can't as citizens say health is my right and then do not adhere to a system of living or a pattern of living which is contrary to your own wellness, you know, which should harm your wellness. I think it should go together. And the government has been doing a lot of things to improve primary care, you know, the improve access at the villages, at the tier 3, tier 4 kind of locations, bring in technology such as teleconsultations, telepathology, remote monitoring to, you know, improve access. Unfortunately, 70% of India's technology in healthcare and maybe more than 70% of the skill sets in terms of advanced doctors with advanced degrees or advanced experience, I think it's concentrated on in maybe a handful of towns and cities. So whereas the population is skewed the other way, that, you know, a lot of the people are in rural areas or in semi-urban areas where, you know, access to healthcare is limited. I think that's a challenge that we need to face. That's a challenge that we would need to overcome. While technology is helpful, I think what is important is to reduce the demand for tertiary care of the highest order, because we are still short of the required capacity, required infrastructure. And that can happen only when we really focus on wellness and preventative care.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. I think those are great points. You mentioned technology, and of course, you know, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, we heard a lot about advancements made in telemedicine. You know, and you know, that was because people couldn't, you know, visit hospitals. So there were some advancements made. I wanted to check with you two things. I mean, has that momentum kept on going? And secondly, you know, aside from telemedicine, what are the other kind of technological advancements that we really need to focus on to, you know, improve healthcare delivery?
Yeah. So it is true that during the lockdown period of COVID and, you know, maybe in particular during the second wave, the Delta wave, the demand for remote consultations or teleconsultations really took off. But the technology always existed. That, you know, well before COVID, the technology for remote consultation was always there. I think as a society, we were not very keen on using that in the past, because as a society and as individuals, we would prefer to go to hospitals, want to sit across a doctor and, you know, have an in-person conversation, want the doctor to physically examine us and all that. So therefore, that preference, that mindset about healthcare is more in-person and, you know, there is a personal contact required. I think that mindset pre-COVID really did not allow the teleconsultation to take off. While during COVID, like I said, particularly during the second wave, it really improved as a proportion of the total consultations in the country. But ever since the restrictions were withdrawn, that in terms of travel, in terms of lockdown, ever since the restrictions were withdrawn, people went back to really physical consultations. I think we have seen in our hospital network, during that peak of COVID, that about 30% of all our consultations were on a teleconsultation platform or a telemedicine platform. It has come down to 2% now. The technology is the same, the patients are the same, but I think now the preference for people is to really come down to hospital and meet a doctor. I think this is what I talked about earlier, that, you know, when these are opportunity to improve access. You know, for example, a teleconsultation is a great tool for rural areas to be covered with advanced specialties. But I think the mindset is change is required, both at the provider level, even hospitals and doctors would have to feel comfortable even today to really use it. And of course, at the user level, at the patients and their families level, we really need to feel comfortable that, you know, it would work. But finally, one aspect which is actually seems to be, you know, picking up pace is on use of artificial intelligence in applications in healthcare. I for one believe that we would need a paradigm in which it can really work. We would need guardrails, so to speak, particularly in healthcare while we use AI. But there are straightforward applications, you know, where it can be a decision support or a decision enhancement kind of a tool. But more advanced uses of AI in healthcare, to my mind, we have to be careful as we go down that path.
Yes, of course. And, you know, I guess, you know, these days, no conversation on technology is complete without considering the use of AI, because that technology is rapidly progressing and growing. So just to sort of touch on one more point, I mean, you mentioned that there are some straightforward use cases. What is the implementation like? Has it already started being implemented? Is there some way to go as yet?
Yeah, I know some easy examples are giant things like conversational AI, that, you know, where we use chatbots. I'm giving our examples, you know, in our network. We use chatbots for interacting with our patients and their families. You know, it can handle a lot of the routine queries more efficiently, take the load away from human beings and, you know, use them more productively. So like that, like I said, you know, that's a straightforward use, you know, using a capability. We are exploring the use of AI in radiology imaging, that, you know, for example, all the images like an X-ray or a CT scan or a MRI, any kind of radiology images, are first passed through an AI layer, which would highlight potential anomalies, you know, highlight it for a doctor to look at and form a final view. So it is not replacing the doctor at all. It is, like I said, a decision support tool which is getting done. We could use AI to, say, produce discharge summaries and case summaries and all that. These are straightforward uses, like I said earlier, that, you know, non-controversial, and, you know, there are obviously benefits of productivity and, you know, maybe enhance the quality of decision making. But when we go down the path of predictive diagnosis, using AI on data of a large number of patients, we have to be mindful of the privacy norms and privacy concerns of individuals. And when we use the data to predict a potential diagnosis or a potential medical pathway that a person might traverse, I think we have to be careful so that it is well divorced from the business of healthcare, that we are not using it to make the person consume more healthcare. That's the reason I talked about the need to have guardrails when we look at AI's applications in healthcare. But again, using data at the country level, to identify vulnerable geographies or vulnerable segments of population for targeted intervention could be a great use. But then, we have to be mindful of the potential for misuse in AI, as we go down the path.
Okay, thank you. I mean, those were all, fascinating use cases. And I think you absolutely make a correct point when you say we have to apply it, but also be cautious as we go down this road. And just as we're coming to the end of our discussion today, since it's the occasion of World Health Day, I wanted to ask, what role can individuals and communities play in promoting and maintaining good health practices? I suspect that, of course, we've covered some of this, but, just to emphasize the point again.
Yeah, so I would really, Jayant, want to emphasize the point I made earlier about the need for wellness, need for a preventatively oriented lifestyle. And more than that, all of us taking ownership and accountability for our own health, I think that is important. And the community, the peer pressure which can come positively to nudge people in this direction, good examples in the community, role models, I think all that would help. I think the journey for a nation like ours, 1.4 billion people, when we are trying to change direction from a curative orientation to a preventative orientation, I think it is a significant change, not going to happen in some years. It is a journey of some distance. But I think examples of success, examples of good stories coming out from various parts of the country would spur that movement. It would spur individuals to really, make the change that is required. When individuals actually start making the changes, the collective and the society changes. I think, therefore, there is a community responsibility to encourage this kind of a behavior, this kind of a mindset. And I think nobody can do it alone. I think all of us in our surroundings, not only our immediate family, extended family, the larger society, would have to play a key role as the country moves down that path.
All right, thank you. And I think we've had a really interesting conversation today. And I particularly like the point that you make about moving towards preventative healthcare. I think that's a really important mission for the country to undertake. So thank you, Dilip, for joining us today and for sharing your insights so forthrightly. Thank you for making time for us on the CII podcast.
Thank you, Jayant. It's been a pleasure being in this podcast, and all the best to you.
Thank you for listening to CII Podcasts.